This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
NAFTA 2.0. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Monday, October 1st. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The U.S. and Canada have reached a last-minute deal to replace the North American Free Trade Agreements, an accord that already includes Mexico.
President Trump says the FBI has free rein to investigate allegations against Brett Kavanaugh, but opponents say the White House is restricting the probe.
The earthquake and tsunamis that struck central Indonesia have killed more than 800 people. There are warnings that the count could go much higher.
And on the tech front, how will the new iPhone stand up when submerged in liquids?
You know, iPhones, at least dating back to the iPhone 7 models, and certainly many rival phones, including Samsung Galaxies and others, have been water resistant for a while now. What Apple is now pushing, though, is not only that the new phones are indeed still water resistant, but that they can withstand accidental spills of coffee, soda, beer, whatever.
Ed Baig at USA Today on his brutal iPhone tests. He's here in about 20 minutes. The U.S. and Canada have reached a last-minute deal to rework the North American Free Trade Agreement. Last night's pending agreement will allow Canada to join an accord reached in late August between the U.S. and Mexico. More from this morning's Mike Gavin.
The biggest impact is expected to be on the auto industry, requiring a greater portion of vehicles to be made in North America and with high-wage labor in the U.S. and Canada. The Wall Street Journal says one of Canada's last-minute concessions was a pledge to curb protection for its dairy industry, a policy President Trump has frequently criticized as unfairly restricting American exports. The U.S., in turn, compromised by dropping its demand to get rid of the special NAFTA courts that allowed member states to challenge trade restrictions opposed by the others. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Aides to President Trump tell the Journal that the revised NAFTA marks a significant turning point in trade policy, showing Mr. Trump's ability to craft deals, not just threaten to rip up old ones or otherwise restrict commerce with tariffs. A mass burial of earthquake and tsunami victims began today in Indonesia. The toll of more than 800 dead is largely from the city of Palu, and is expected to rise as areas cut off by the damage are reached. The magnitude 7.5 earthquake struck Friday and created a tsunami said to have been as high as 20 feet in places. A government official says a mass grave being dug will be 33 feet by 330 feet and can be enlarged if needed. Officials say it is needed for health and religious reasons. Indonesia is majority Muslim, and religious custom calls for burials soon after death, typically within one day. Here's Sky News reporter Adele Robinson.
In the aftermath of the quake and tsunami, access to shelter is sparse. Rubble blankets the ground where homes and businesses once stood, and food, water, and medicines limited. International aid's desperately needed.
Indonesia's vice president is warning that thousands may have died. There's a need for heavy equipment to reach possible survivors buried in collapsed buildings, including an 8-story hotel in Palu, where voices were heard in the rubble. Just because Democrats and Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee appeared to have achieved some kind of compromise regarding Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh on Friday doesn't mean the ceasefire will last. Democrats are now accusing the White House of placing overly restrictive limitations on the FBI investigation into Judge Kavanaugh, accused of sexual misconduct when he was a teenager. President Trump says investigators have free rein.
Having the FBI go out, do a thorough investigation, whether it's 3 days or 7 days, I think it's going to be less than a week, but having them do a thorough investigation, I actually think will be a blessing in disguise. It'll be a good thing.
The inquiry was supposed to last no more than a week. A deal cut Friday between Republican Jeff Flake of Arizona and Democrat Chris Coons of Delaware. The Wall Street Journal reported that the FBI probe would include interviews with the first two women who publicly accused Judge Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct, Christine Blasey Ford and Deborah Ramirez, but not a third woman. It's 11 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News.
Look into any great business, whether it's a manufacturer or a hotel, a store, school, or hospital. Look into each and every one of them, and you'll find the same thing. Great people. At Kronos, we believe that great businesses are powered by great people. And with Kronos Workforce Solutions, we'll help you find them, keep them, and engage them. Learn more at Kronos.com. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Thanks for being with us. As the midterm elections approach, America's electronic voting systems are more vulnerable than ever. What's being done to fix them? We're joined now by cybersecurity journalist Kim Zetter, who's got a piece running in the New York Times. Kim, what kind of security do we have?
It's really what I would refer to as Band-Aid security. So we're really not in much of a different shape than we were in 2016. There are some differences, some changes, but certainly not what you would want.
Wow. What are the Band-Aids, by the way? Let's work backwards, I guess.
So what DHS did prior to 2016 is it reached out to states and it offered this scanning service that it does. What this means is it simply will scan the internet-facing system. So these were the servers like the voter registration databases, things like that. Anything that's online, DHS will do this remote scan. And all it's doing is looking to see if you have any open software vulnerabilities that are known, software vulnerabilities that we know about that also have a patch available. And it will tell the states where it's found a vulnerability, and it will keep scanning. They will keep scanning, like on a weekly basis, on a biweekly basis, to see when the customer has patched that system. So they did that to a few states before the 2016 election, and then they've done that to more states or more counties now since then. But it's still the amount is, I think, it's less than half. And the scanning is really sort of cosmetic. It's getting at only the internet-facing systems. It's not getting at the core back-end systems that are supposedly not connected to the internet. So it's not getting at the voting machines at all. It's not looking at the core vulnerabilities there. And it's also not touching what are the election management systems. And these are the systems that sit in a county headquarters. They are used to program the voting machines, and they are also used to tabulate the votes. So these are actually the most critical systems, not the internet-facing system.
Okay, so if you're an average voter, do you walk into a polling place in November with the utmost confidence? Or are you saying there are some doubts here about whether or not we could be hacked?
There has always been the possibility for our election systems to be hacked, going back 15, 16 years since many of these systems were implemented. We're just addressing it now because of the Russian threat. But the situation is not new. I would not tell voters not to vote. Definitely, I want voters to go out and vote as you did before. The problem is not the voters' problem. The problem is the back end. States and counties need to implement mandatory audits. And they need to have paper trails, either a paper ballot the voter fills out or have the machine produce paper trail. And they need to do a manual audit of those against the digital vote. It's not up to the voter here, and I don't want voters to come away with the wrong message that they shouldn't vote.
As you point out, there's really two types of voting machines in use. Do they provide that type of backup?
So many states have, recognizing this problem, obviously that digital ballots or digital votes can be altered, have mandated. California, Ohio, Florida, for example, mandated years ago that their machines they either need optical scan machines where the voter fills out a full-size paper ballot that gets scanned into machine, or the fully electronic machine has to produce a paper trail. So many states and many voters are now voting on these systems. The problem is that states, the county election officials are not looking at that paper after the election is over in many cases.
Mm. We're speaking with Kim Zetter, veteran cybersecurity journalist, also author of a book called Countdown to Zero Day. She's got a piece running in the New York Times entitled The Crisis of Election Security. How did we get so vulnerable?
Oh, we got vulnerable because of a reaction to the Florida fiasco in the 2000 presidential election. In that case, I'm sure everyone recalls the dangling Chad.
Wow, yeah.
That took, you know, the race to the Supreme Court, and lawmakers in Washington, D.C. decided that they didn't want that to happen again, and they thought they came to the wrong conclusion that it was the paper ballots that were the problem and not the fact that we didn't actually do a recount, a manual recount. And so what they did was they set up legislation that was designed to get rid of those systems, and many states overreacted and went to systems that didn't have any paper at all. And that's how we got the system where we have today.
Thanks, Kim. Kim Zenner, cybersecurity journalist. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, Jennifer Koschenka is here with more of America's First News.
Sporting Canada is back in a revamped North American free trade deal with the U.S. and Mexico after weeks of bitter, high-pressure negotiations had brushed up against a midnight deadline. In a joint statement, U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer and Canadian Foreign Affairs Minister Chrystia Freeland said the agreement will strengthen the middle class and create good, well-paying jobs and new opportunities for the nearly half billion people who call North America home. The new deal, reached just before a midnight deadline imposed by the U.S., will be called the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, or USMCA. FBI agents have interviewed one of the three women who have accused Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh of sexual misconduct as Republicans and Democrats battle over whether the Bureau will have enough time and freedom to conduct a thorough investigation before a high-stakes vote on his nomination to the nation's highest court. The White House insists it is not micromanaging the new one-week review of Kavanaugh's background, but some Democratic lawmakers claim the White House is keeping investigators from interviewing certain witnesses. Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii tells ABC she can't understand why Kavanaugh wouldn't want the FBI to clear his name.
When he kept saying that I didn't do it, then why wouldn't he call for an FBI investigation? Why wouldn't he do that?
President Trump tweeted that no matter how much time and discretion the FBI is given, it will never be enough for Democrats trying to keep Kavanaugh off the bench. Body bags were placed side by side in a freshly dug mass grave today as a hard-hit Indonesian city began burying its dead from a devastating earthquake and tsunami that killed more than 840 people and left thousands homeless. The death toll is expected to keep rising as areas cut off by the damage are reached. Payback and the Ryder Cup belong to Europe. 2 years after the Americans thought they had their Ryder Cup problems figured out, Europe reminded them yesterday why it practically has owned this trophy for the last quarter century. British Open champion Francesco Molinari became the first European to win all five of his matches. He was two up and safely on the green at the 16th when Phil Mickelson hit into the water, removed his cap, and conceded the match.
Goodness gracious. Boy, this is a tail-kicking now. We'll just call it the European Cup.
I think it's there.
Oh, jeez. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. A wet iPhone doesn't mean a dead iPhone anymore. With the iPhone XS and XS Max that hit stores Friday, Apple promises something more these days, models that can resist accidental spills of liquids from fizzy soda to bubbly alcoholic beverages. USA Today personal technology columnist Ed Baig tested a new iPhone in all those liquids, so you don't have to. Ed, what'd you do?
We dropped an iPhone XS into a bucket, or actually, I guess, a pitcher of the various liquids. We wanted to see if we can get the iPhone drunk, so we put it in with beer, and we have bubbly wine and coffee and Coca-Cola. And guess what? It worked. The phone continued to work after each spill.
What did you find that there were any kind of limits to this?
Not really. I mean, technically there are limits. I mean, there's something called IP68, which is basically a standard, which basically means that if the phone that meets that standard can be submerged in fresh water for up to 2 meters for up to a half hour. Mm. Now, we didn't keep the iPhone in the Coke, for example, or the beer for more than a couple of minutes. Really, not even that. So in that sense, I guess, think about it in real world terms. If you are sitting on your desk and you spill coffee on it, yeah, what are you going to do? You're going to dry it off immediately. And that's what you're supposed to do, by the way. It's not like you want it to linger. And Apple even cautions that if, in fact, this happens and you spill something on it, you should dry it immediately and certainly dry it before you charge it up.
We're speaking with Ed Baig at USA Today. He drowned the iPhone in a bunch of liquids to see how it would hold up. It's an important distinction you make because water-resistant does not mean waterproof.
Correct. Correct. And technically, you're not supposed to swim with these. I do know people who do, and they've come out fine, but, you know, Apple will not tell you to do that, and I'm certainly not telling you to do that. I mean, the idea is really to prevent an accident, you know.
Yeah.
You drop it in a puddle or by the seashore and suddenly a big wave comes and hits it. It's that kind of thing. You're not meant to swim with it, though, as I said, technically you can keep the phone, at least the standard tells you, you can keep the phone in fresh water for up to about 2 meters for a half hour. So I guess you could swim in it under those circumstances.
Are the phones more durable than they've been, or is this a standard we've been carrying around for some time?
Well, we've heard it before, but Apple says yes, indeed, that this is the most durable glass they've ever put on an iPhone. I did not do drop tests. I know a couple of people who did, and some people reported no problems. There were a couple of scuff marks, a couple of people I talked to. Again, Apple claims it's the most durable, but it doesn't necessarily mean shatterproof. So, you know, again, my advice is don't push it to the limit.
Like I said, Ed Baig at USA Today. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday, October 1st. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Canada, at the last minute, joins a reworked NAFTA that already included Mexico. Death toll from an earthquake and tsunami in Indonesia is more than 800 and is expected to rise. Questions about the scope of the FBI probe into Judge Kavanaugh. Price of drinks aboard American Airlines going up by a dollar starting today. Sports, two tiebreakers needed today to decide a couple of baseball division winners and wild card teams. And how Dunkin' Donuts fans are responding to the company name change. That story in about 20 minutes. 10 years ago, the failure of Lehman Brothers exposed how cavalier the world had been towards risk. Households had bought homes they thought could never go down in price, and banks had made loans they thought would never default and repackaged them into securities to make them seem riskless. With time, even the deepest traumas wear off, and there are signs that risk-taking is returning, though in different forms from before. More from Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. Greg, how do you see it?
We got a crisis basically because everybody became somewhat blind to the presence of risk, whether it was bankers who thought that these loans could never default or home buyers who thought their homes would never decline in price. They essentially didn't realize the risks they were taking on. And ever since, all of us, bankers, investors, and we as individuals, have really tried to avoid a repeat by also limiting our exposure to risk, whether it's in regulations or attitudes towards risk, such as whether or not we want to buy stocks and what types of stocks we buy. And I think that helps explain the kind of economy we've had in the last 10 years. It's been very stable growth because we haven't had a lot of booms and busts and crises. But it's also been very muted growth because you don't get the kind of investment and risk-taking from which long-term prosperity is born.
That's interesting. So you wrote households and investors are much warier of risk. What's some of the other evidence that you've seen?
Well, housing is a very good example. Like, it used to be that on a typical year we'd build 1.5 million new homes. In this expansion so far, it's more like 1 million, and there's several reasons for that. One is that, we're an aging country, so maybe fewer people need homes, but also regulators have made it harder to get mortgages, so that's limited who can buy a house. And also, I think young families, young adults, are also more hesitant to make that size of a commitment, and you can see that in their own behavior. They live at home with their parents longer, they take longer to get married and longer to have children.
Wow. What kind of ripple effect, I guess, does that have?
Well, I think one thing you would look at is the business area. So businesses, for example, a lot of them were caught with too much debt or not enough cash on hand in the crisis, and they've kind of learned to sort of like be more cautious with their investing. And so we see investment, if you look at housing and business investment combined, it tends to be a little bit more muted. You don't have so many people going out to start their own business, partly it's because it's harder to get the loan. You know, if you used to turn to a home equity loan to start your new business, those are harder to get. But I also think people are at an age and a sort of a psyche that it's just something they don't want to do. Sure, you have your Jeff Bezos here and your Elon Musk there, but they're really kind of the exception, you know? It seems that even if you look at Silicon Valley, what people want is to not start the next Google or Facebook, but to be bought by the next Google or Facebook. The level of new businesses being formed is actually historically quite low. I think that's troublesome. I mean, essentially, people need to take risks to come up with a newer, a better product, and if nobody wants to take risks, we're going to kind of stagnate.
Well, we're speaking with Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at the Wall Street Journal. He's written a piece entitled "The Financial Crisis Made Us Afraid of Risk for a While." So you mentioned it before, like this pessimism is why the bull market has lasted so long. Does that mean once we arrive at a downturn, it might actually be a softer downturn, or that not related?
I think it helps explain why the bull market has lasted as long as it has. I mean, there's an old saying on Wall Street, that bull markets climb a wall of worry. That is to say, if everybody's pessimistic, there is nobody that's fully invested, and therefore if some kind of shock knocks prices down, you don't have a lot of people forced to capitulate and sell into that. So in some sense, pessimism is a healthy background for the stock market to rise. And that's similar for the economy. If you don't have a lot of people investing in crazy projects, you're less likely to get a bust in a recession. Now, that said, I think you've seen some signs that this wariness is wearing off. The market has reached very high levels. Valuations are very high. You see that in the property market as well. Some of the pessimism that we've noticed for the last 8 or 9 years has worn off. I don't think you can call it the most hated bull market in history any longer. And I think those are the circumstances about which risks start to grow. And if you look at the regulatory side too, yeah, we've done a very good job of protecting our banks from the sorts of risk-taking that caused the last crisis. But, you know, risk never kind of like goes away. It just sort of changes shape. It's sort of like water running downhill if it encounters a barrier or tries to find a way around it. And we see that happening now. Some of the risky types of loans that banks won't make, like heavily indebted companies, those are being made by other companies like investment banks or private equity funds. So you, in some sense, still have risk out there. It's just in forms that we're not used to. And we can't have a lot of confidence about whether the system will be safer as a result.
Thanks, Greg. Greg Ipp, chief economics commentator at The Wall Street Journal. Reminder, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm and you think you can handle it, you can follow me directly on Twitter with the username @GordonDeal. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Monday. Some wish it were September 31st. Alas, it is not.
No, it is not.
Welcome, October. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories he'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, there was more on the line than pride for a Chargers fan and a 49ers fan during yesterday's NFL action. It was a winner-take-all for the rights to their unborn son's fandom. And a 29-27 victory by the Chargers means that the son of Saul and Lizette Gomez of Compton, California, will be brought into the world in blue and gold. According to ESPN, this was all part of an elaborate gender reveal for the couple's baby. Yesterday morning, Lizette posted a picture to Instagram with her in a Chargers jersey and Saul in his 49ers gear, along with a sign which read, "We have a lot riding on this game. Future fan of?" The board then teased the impending arrival of their son, who is due March 26th. Full disclosure, this deal was worked out a couple weeks ago before 49ers quarterback Jimmy Garoppolo suffered a season-ending injury, but Dad kept the bet anyway. The 49ers jumped out to a 14-0 lead, giving Saul some confidence, but the Chargers not at the score at 17 at the half and held on to win.
You know, at least the 49ers have some trophies.
Yes.
The Chargers?
Not so much.
Yeah, not really. In fact, not at all.
Yeah. And here's what I know, too. You can try all you want to sort of cajole your children into being fans of the team you want them to be fans of. They're just going to do whatever they want.
That's
anyway.
Right.
I mean, I know a diehard Eagles fan whose kid is a Giants fan. And he's really good about it. He actually takes in the Giants games. Uh-huh. And, you know, he's good about it that way. But no matter what you do, no matter what kind of stuff you have hanging up in your house, they're going to do what they're going to do anyway.
My dad used to bring me to Jets games when I was little because he had season tickets.
Yeah.
But there was a period period like where I'm hanging out with different friends. At one point, I liked the Vikings. Then I happened to acquire a Colts helmet, you know, so I thought the Colts were cool. Yes. And what else? I think I liked the Raiders for a period, but it just came back to the Jets.
Came back to the Jets, that winning tradition, as we spoke about
before.
That's
right. You know, the standards are just so high.
Yes, yeah. Such magnetism there. And here's a story that's likely to make Gordon Deal take notice. A Pennsylvania man's love of Chinese food may have recently won him a cool million. A man named Ronnie Martin drives to New Jersey every day for work and regularly stops at a gas station on the way to pick up lottery tickets. On the evening of July's massive $543 million jackpot drawing, Ronnie bought three Mega Millions tickets, hand-picking numbers that were on the slip of paper in a fortune cookie he opened years ago. According to lottery officials, Ronnie really liked those lucky numbers and has been sticking with them, but hadn't won any big money like this. Ronnie and his wife Shirley say they'll use the prize money to pay off their house and bills before putting the rest toward their savings. $1 million playing lucky numbers.
Man, that's unbelievable.
Now, of course, we know that you're a big fan of Chinese food.
I'm sure
you have more than a few fortune cookies probably sitting in a drawer in your house right now. So,
you know what it is? I don't.
No?
I don't eat the fortune cookies.
You don't eat the fortune cookies?
I just throw them out.
Oh, boy.
Well, after I eat all the fried noodles, I thought maybe I should just back off on the fortune cookies.
How many millions of dollars have you lost out on by throwing your fortune cookies away?
You think this guy had chicken mei fun? Because that's my dish.
Oh,
the chicken mei fun.
Perhaps.
If he ate that, I'm ripping off a page from his playbook.
I can tell you
that right now. This needs more investigation. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
Time now for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact michiganbusiness.org today. More than half of workers think naps can boost productivity, but many of us don't have the luxury of getting some shut-eye on the clock in the afternoon. Or if you have the time, maybe there's no peaceful place. What can you do instead? Moneyish.com says eat energizing snacks like veggie sticks with hummus or a bowl of cereal. Both get digested quickly and create more energy. But avoid sweet vending machine snacks or simple white carbs, because a rapid spike in blood sugar followed by a crash that will leave you tired and crabby. You can also drink water, since dehydration can leave you feeling more sluggish or fatigued. You want to skip the coffee, though. The caffeine can impact your sleep that night if you're slipping after 2 p.m. However, you can grab green tea to get the same hot drink experience. It's got a lower caffeine count, and the natural antioxidants can also perk you up. Better yet, take a walk outside to pick up another bottle of water or a cup of tea. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koschenka is back with more of America's First News.
Ford in the U.S. and Canada have reached a dramatic last-minute deal on revising NAFTA, lifting a cloud of uncertainty over the quarter-century-old pact. The pending agreement will allow Canada to join an accord reached in late August between the U.S. and Mexico and diminishes the prospects for President Trump to follow through on his threats, either to kill NAFTA outright or to break the trilateral pact into separate pieces. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Mr. Prime Minister, is it a good deal for Canada?
Good day for Canada.
How come, sir?
Bonne journée pour le Canada.
How come, sir?
Have you given concessions on dairy?
Talk to you guys tomorrow.
The surprising Washington-Ottawa accord came just 4 days after Trump's trade representative told Congress that the gaps between the two countries appeared too great to bridge in time to meet the U.S.-imposed Sunday deadline. President Trump's denying restricting an FBI inquiry into sexual misconduct allegations made against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, they have free rein. They're going to do whatever they have to do, whatever it is they do. They'll be doing things that we never even thought of. And hopefully at the conclusion, Everything will be fine.
Democrats have been alarmed at reports that the White House is limiting who could be interviewed under the investigation. Several media outlets report that one of Kavanaugh's accusers, Julie Swetnick, would not be interviewed. California Governor Jerry Brown has approved the nation's strongest net neutrality law, prompting an immediate lawsuit by the Trump administration and opening the next phase in the battle over regulating the internet. Advocates of net neutrality hope California's law, which Brown signed yesterday to stop internet providers from favoring certain content or websites, will push Congress to enact national rules or encourage other states to create their own. But the Justice Department quickly moved to stop the law from taking effect, arguing that it creates anti-consumer requirements that go against the federal government's approach to deregulating the internet. Well, the intelligence of dogs may be a bit overrated. Researchers from the University of Exeter in England compared the brain power of dogs with other domestic animals, social hunters, and carnivores, and found that they are no smarter than bears, lions, or hyenas. The animals are rated by categories such as sensory, physical, spatial, and social cognition and self-awareness.
You know what really matters in that story? Is that the domesticated feline does not even appear, not even appear on that list.
Your dog's not that smart.
It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. Some people are getting nostalgic over Dunkin' Donuts' name change to just Dunkin'. Jamie Rook, a 27-year-old from Massachusetts, heard opportunity knocking. She's looking for mugs bearing the soon-to-be-replaced Dunkin' Donuts logo, hoping they'll become collector's items. Larry Fitzmaurice, a 31-year-old writer from Brooklyn, New York, saw the news as a sign it was time to get that tattoo he's long wanted, a coffee cup bearing the DD logo, which will soon disappear. Jeremy Johnson is hoping the name change will help sell the Dunkin' Donuts sign that's been sitting around for months at the Roosevelt Tower Antiques and Salvage store that he manages in Derby, Connecticut. Frank Summers of North Carolina is facing his second shock. He tells the Wall Street Journal, first they do away with crullers, now this. The company said its name change is part of its focus on beverages, which represent 60% of sales. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.